أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبه نستعين وهو خير موفق ومعين. ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد، اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد وعجل فرجهم وآله الطيبين الطاهرين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين، روحي وأرواح العالمين بتراب مقدمه الفداء، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إنا أنزلناه في ليلة القدر وما أدراك ما ليلة القدر، ليلة القدر خير من ألف شهر، تنزل الملائكة والروح فيها بإذن ربهم من كل أمر، سلام هي حتى مطلع الفجر. Day before yesterday, I ended by talking about Qadar and Qadha, and I broached two questions. One was, how is it that we talk about Qadar in Islam? There are many verses in the Quran that speak of Qadar, God's predetermination. خَلَقَ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ فَقَدَّرَهُ. This taqdeer, this qadar, is mentioned over and over again in the Quran. How is this predetermination compatible, this divine predetermination compatible with our belief that we are free human beings? To answer this question, I explained that we must draw a distinction between two types of predeterminations. There's a qadar ilmi or taqdeer ilmi, and there's a taqdeer ayni. In other words, predetermination, when attributed to God, when we say God predetermines things in the world, this can be viewed in one of two ways. When we read the riwayat and the reports from the Ahlul Bayt and the verses of the Quran, we realize that qadar and taqdeer is intended in two ways. One way is taqdeer ilmi. In other words, God has knowledge of all things from all eternity. God knows how everything is going to unfold. God has knowledge of all things. That's taqdeer ilmi. That's qadar ilmi. Another meaning of predetermination, which is the more problematic one, is taqdeer ayni. In other words, God predetermines things in an objective way. In other words, He allots everything its due proportion. This person must live 60 years, that person must live 50 years, that person is going to be affected by such and such diseases, or this is going to happen on this year, that plague is going to happen on that year, this earthquake is going to happen on this year. The various bodily features that we have, the various physical characteristics that we have, the various facial features that we have, these are all predetermined by God. And so, it is a very contentious question as to whether this taqdeer conflicts with our belief in free will. In fact, the question is so problematic that Marhum Akhund Khorasani, the great Shia master of the science of jurisprudence and usul, towards the end of this book, when he's introduces this question after contemplating it for some time. He then goes on and says, when the pen reaches this question, it breaks. Qalam bishkast. In other words, it's too difficult to consider, but inshallah, we'll give a very simple answer to it tonight. The answer in relation to this aspect of taqdeer, which is taqdeer ayni, which is God's predetermining everything, predestining everything, is that predestination here means that God, in fact, structures and arranges everything in its just place, everything in its and the place that it should be. Okay, what does that mean? That means that as I explained in the previous session, the 90% of the factors in our lives that are beyond our control. Okay, you know, we can all acknowledge that most of the factors that contribute to the direction of our lives are beyond our control. We have power only over a very, very narrow spectrum of factors. Otherwise, everything else is beyond our control. So those things that are beyond our control, God predetermines those things. And by predetermining these factors that are beyond our control, He is, in fact, giving shape to the framework and to the context within which we exercise our free will. What I'm trying to say is that God does not predetermine our will. God does not compel us to act one way or the other. God has predetermined that I should have free will. And God has predetermined the 90% of the factors that are beyond my control to be in a certain way, and thereby, by those things being in a certain way, I am tested and my reactions to those factors that are beyond my control constitute the test and the imtihan that I'm supposed to go through in this world. So predetermination, neither of its meanings, goes against free will. That's a question that a lot of the brothers and sisters in faith have trouble understanding. And so that was a simple answer to it, inshallah, tonight. The next question is concerning the sealing of fates. We believe that on Laylatul Qadr, on the night of Qadr, all fates will be sealed. There are multiple rawayat in that regard that say that on Laylatul Qadr, the fates of all humankind for the next year will be sealed. Now the question is this, does that put us in a straitjacket? Does that mean if everything is sealed, or if our fates are sealed, if our destinies are sealed, does that mean that we cannot change things, that we are helpless? Or not? Let's not just see it from our perspective, okay, from a broader view. When something is predestined on the night of Qadr, is there any chance that it might be changed, that it might be altered? And the answer to this question, as I alluded to in the previous session, is given by the Quran. Verse 39, Surah Ra'd, A'udhu billahi minash shaitan ar-rajim, Yamhu Allah ma yasha wa yathbit, wa indahu umul kitab. It's one of those key verses in the Quran that helps a lot in understanding a very critical and important topic of the Shia faith. The question, or the answer to this question, is that the higher realms of existence, the higher realms of existence that transcend the material physical world that we live in, can be divided into two general categories. The lower realms, or the realm of Malakut, the realm of Alam al-Mithal, and the higher realm, which is the realm of Jabarut. The lower realm, which is the Alam al-Malakut, the Alam al-Mithal, is subject to change. I've given an explanation regarding this Alam Malakut and Alam Misal before. Alam Malakut and Alam Misal is an intermediary level of existence between the highest spiritual realm and the physical realm that we live in. So, this Alam Malakut, which is also referred to as the realm of the Muqaddarat, the realm of Taqdeer, according to the Rawayat, is subject to change. Okay. And it is this realm that is called the Tablet of Effacement and Confirmation. This verse that I just read to you, يَمْحُ اللَّهُ مَا يَشَاءُ وَيُثْبِتُ عِنْدَهُ أُمُّ الْكِتَابِ. God effaces whatever He wishes and confirms whatever He wishes, and with Him is the Mother Book. The first part of the verse, يَمْحُ اللَّهُ مَا يَشَاءُ وَيُثْبِتُ. He erases whatever He wants and confirms whatever He wants, and with Him is the Mother Book. This first part of the verse is a reference to the Tablet of Effacement and Confirmation, which is the Alam al-Mithal, which is the Alam al-Malakut. And this world is subject to change. It's not like the highest realm of existence that is beyond change, that transcends change. And by actions in this world, by what we do in this world, and by what takes place in this world, that Alam al-Misal could be altered and changed. Right. You know how in cartoons you have sometimes this person or this boy travels back in time and then changes one small incident or one small event that took place or one small action, and then that basically changes the whole course of the future. That could be a good analogy for explaining how we affect that Alam al-Misal, that higher realm of existence. Okay. By acting a certain way, okay, we determine a certain future that is reflected on Alam al-Misal. If you dream in your dreams, you'll see that particular future that is based and grounded on a particular course of action in this world. Okay. But then we might do something, or something might take place that changes the picture in that world. And by changing the picture in that world, in return, it changes the course of history and the course of future in this world. Okay, let me give you an example. Say I'm a bad person, and I've done certain things, certain sins. Say a salawat, please. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. I've done certain things or certain sins, okay, that have caused my life to be curtailed, to say 50 or 60 years. Okay. That's the picture of my future that is in the Alam Misal. Okay. And people might see me in their dreams and see that I have a very short lifespan. Okay. But then what will happen is I will do some good to my parents. Which you know in the riwayat from the Ahlul Bayt, doing good to your parents is one of the most effective things that you can do for your well-being in this life and the hereafter. It has a huge effect on both your material well-being, whether it's your finances, your monetary issues, or on your spiritual issues. All right, so I do some good to my parents, and that good that I do changes the picture in that Alam Misal, and thereby changes my future in this world, and extends my life for, say, 20 plus years. That's why we have riwayat, multiple riwayat, and the Shia books of tradition that say that most people in this world die of ajal mu'allaq as opposed to ajal musamma. Most people in this life die from ajal mu'allaq. How can I explain that? By their indefinite time of death, not their final time of death. We have indefinite times of deaths. We have a final time of death. Okay. In other words, depending on our course of life, we might die at 60 years old, we might die at 70 years old, we might die at 80 years old, and the final date is, say, 90 years old. Most people die in their earlier stages because of sins that we do. Okay. But there are certain things that if we look out for, that if we be careful about, we'll live until that final date of death, that is, say, 90 years old. That is a reference, or that is understandable in reference to this concept of the tablet of effacement and confirmation. And it is in this context that the whole doctrine of Bada and the Shia faith becomes understandable. You've all heard of Bada. Unfortunately, a lot of times, by the other schools of thought, we are attacked as believing that God changes his mind. That's how Bada is portrayed, which is not the case. Far from it. We believe that God knows everything. What Bada is a reference to this verse that I've read to you a couple of times in the past couple of minutes. يَمْحُ اللَّهُ مَا يَشَاءُ وَيُثْبِتُ عِنْدَهُ أُمُّ الْكِتَابِ. يَمْحُ اللَّهُ مَا يَشَاءُ وَيُثْبِتُ. God erases whatever he wants and confirms whatever he wants. That's Bada. A certain course of action in this world has been determined, but then something happens, God changes things. And Alam Misal, and then by effect, by extension, the material world. That's the concept of Bada. So things, muqaddarat, predeterminations, can be changed. Okay. But there is a higher level of existence, the Alam al-Jabarut, the realm of the pure intelligences, where there is no change. That is the world of Umm al-Kitab, the world of the preserved tablet, the Lawha Mahfuz in the Quran. That world basically takes into account all the changes that take place. It records all the changes that take place in this world and records the final destination that everything is going to take, and therefore it is not subject to change. وَعِنْدَهُ أُمُّ الْكِتَابِ. That's the realm of the preserved tablet, as opposed to the realm of مَحْفُ إِثْبَاتِ, the realm of effacement and confirmation. And it is the realm of the لوح محفوظ, the preserved tablet, the realm of the mother book, أُمُّ الْكِتَابِ, that is the realm of قَضَاءَ, as opposed to qadar. There's a qadar and there's a qada. Qada is that predestination that is not changed. Okay. So therefore, those who acquire knowledge of the realm of the preserved tablet, of the realm of the Ummul Kitab, they have knowledge of all the final destinies of everything. So, alam qaza, the alam, the realm of the preserved tablet, which is the highest realm of existence, is beyond change. But the realm, the lower realm of alam misad, is subject to change and can be changed. So the question is this: when we are told that on Laylatul Qadr, things are sealed, our fates are sealed, that does not mean that we are in a straitjacket. Okay. There is always room to change. We can always change the alam misal. Okay. We have control over our future in the, of course, context of the 10% that is 10% of the factors that is in our control. Not in the 90% that is beyond our control. Of course, we could have an indirect effect on the other 90% based on what we do, but our control is over the 10% of the factors. Okay. So we can change our future. We can change the loha. We have the loha mahfu isbat, which we can change, and that changes our future. Okay. And the alam qaza, which is beyond our change, that takes into account everything that we do on our accord and through our free will. Okay. Therefore, it is not as though we are bound to act in a certain way. When in this riwayah from Imam Sadiq, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad, we are told that on the night of the 19th, at-taqdir fi tis'a ashara, on the night of the 19th, there is a taqdir, our predeterminations are allotted to us. Then on the night of the 21st, there is Ibram, it is confirmed. And then on the night of the 23rd, it becomes signed and sealed, which in other riwayat has been interpreted as being transcribed in that highest realm of existence. What this means is that the Imam of our time, the Hujja of our time, he gains knowledge on this night of everything, of all the final destinies of things that will be taking place in the following year. Okay. And he manages the world based on that knowledge. He knows what we will do on our own accord. He knows what we will choose to do based on our own free will. Therefore, it is not as though God says that this person is going to be a sinner in the sense that whether he wants it or not, he's going to be a sinner. That is not the case. That is a wrong understanding. What is predetermined is that certain factors in the life of this person, and it is known by Imam Zaman, and it is known by God that he is going to act in a certain way in reaction to these factors. That was a brief explanation regarding qadar and qadha, as it is a question that pertains to Surah Al-Qadr and the Laylatul Qadr, the night of predetermination, the light of allotment. The next question that I would like to consider is another topic that I alluded to in the previous session on the interpretation of Surah Al-Qadr. And that is what Imam Khomeini says. It's not just Imam Khomeini is not the only one who says this, but among the contemporary scholars, one of the prime example who says this is Imam Khomeini. He says that Laylatul Qadr is the night of the reunion of the Imam, of the Hujjah, of God's Viceroy, with God's Book. That's what happens on Laylatul Qadr, and that is the significance of Laylatul Qadr. We want to understand what this means, the reunion of the Imam, of the Hujjah, with the Book. That, according to Imam Khomeini, is the main reason of significance for Laylatul Qadr. What does this mean? There are certain people, certain skeptics, and certain cynics that might say these things just sound very superstitious. They don't make sense. Okay. Why do you even want to talk about these things? Okay. My reply to them is that if you want to go according to that logic, there's a lot of things in religion that don't make sense based on our primitive common sense. Okay, we cannot make our common sense the judge and the criterion and say this makes sense in religion without really studying it in depth and carefully. That does not make sense in religion. And judging, distinguishing between things based on our own personal primitive common sense. I've come across a lot of people that have that sort of approach, especially in the West with a Western mentality. We have riwayat, we have reports in the corpus of Shia tradition, in the books of Shia tradition, that say that the world is filled with millions and millions of angels. So that if we were to open our eyes, the eyes of our hearts, in this room, we would see it packed with angels. We'd be packed and filled with angels. But to our common sense understanding, that doesn't make sense. A lot of people consider that superstitious. Okay. Or consider the story of Khizr, as Hazrat Khizr, Nabi Khizr in the Quran, and Nabi Musa. The journey that the two have, you've all heard of the journey. They go on this journey, and at one point in this journey, what does Hazrat Khizr do? He goes and takes a seemingly innocent child and slays the child and kills the child. It's in the Quran. All right. So a lot of things in our religion do not make sense to our primitive common sense understanding of things. That doesn't mean that we should just dispense with them. What we need to do is to practice humility and to try to deepen our understanding, to try to strengthen our understanding. That's what we need to do. Not just say, okay, that doesn't make sense to me. That was a preliminary point about this topic, and those who might have their skepticisms about why such topics should be discussed. And let me just make this point as well. Another reason that I would like to talk about this is that we have riwayat in the corpus of Shia tradition in which the imams themselves encourage the Shia that they should have a true understanding of the true existential status of the imams. This is something that has been specified in the riwayat. There's a riwayat from Imam Baqir in Al-Kafi. قال سمعت أبا جعفر يقول وعنده أناس من أصحابه. This particular companion says, I was with Imam Baqir and a number of his companions were with him. And the Imam said, عجبت من قول من قوم عجبت من قوم يتولون ويجعلون أئمة ويصفون أن طاعتنا مفترضة عليهم كطاعة رسول الله. I am surprised and amazed at a group of the Shia who believe that we are their imams, who believe that we must be obeyed by them, that they must obey us. But then they go against themselves. ثُمَّ يَكْسِرُونَ حُجَّتَهُمْ وَيَخْسِمُونَ أَنفُسَهُمْ بِذَعَفِ قُلُوبِهِمْ فَيَنْقُصُونَ حَقَّنَا وَيَعِيبُونَ ذَلَكَ عَلَى مَنْ أَعْتَاهُ اللَّهُ بُرْهَانَ حَقَّ مَعْرِفَتَنَا وَالتَّسْلِيمِ لِأَمْرِنَا. They fail to acknowledge our true status and they hold it against those who endeavor to understand our true status and who hold the true beliefs about our true existential status. Therefore, there is every good reason to take up this question. First of all, it pertains to Surah Al-Qadr. We're trying to understand what Surah Al-Qadr is. Imam Khomeini says that the most important aspect of Surah Al-Qadr is the reunion of the Imam of the time, of the Hujjah of the time, with the book. Okay. And secondly, it has to do with our acknowledgement and our appreciation of the true status of the Ahlul Bayt. Okay. So I think it's a very relevant question that needs to be considered in relation to the tafsir of Surah Al-Qadr. This is the passage from Imam Khomeini. Unfortunately, we're running out of time again. Please pay attention. I'm going to translate. وَچُن در عالم فرق بلکه فرق الفرق فرقانیتی بین قرآنین یعنی قرآن مکتوب منزل و قرآن منزل علیه یعنی کتاب الهی و حقیقت محمدی حاصل شده در لیله وصال وصل بین القرآنین و جمع بین القرآنین فرقانین فرمودیم به این اعتبار نیز این شب قدر است. As in the world of multiplicity, the two Qur'ans, Imam Khomeini says the two Qur'ans, as in the world of multiplicity, I've referred to this, the hierarchy of existence, several times before. I hope you've caught on by now, inshallah ta'ala. As in the world of multiplicity, the two Qur'ans, what are the two Qur'ans? They are the verbal book of God in the Haqiqat Muhammadiyah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. As in the world of multiplicities, these two have been separated on the Laylatul Qadr. We bring them back together. God brings them back together. This is the night of Visal, the night of reunion of the Hujjah of the time and the Quran. All right, so what does this mean? On the one hand, we have riwayat that say that the light of Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. Nuru Ahlul Bayt was the first being that was created by God. أول ما خلق الله نور محمد. What is this Nur? This is the highest realm of existence, okay, that constitutes the true essence and nature of the Imams and the Prophet. That highest realm of existence, that first being created by God. When here the riwayat says awwal ma khalaq Allah, it doesn't mean first in time. It means first in its existential order, in its existential sequence. So the first being created by God was the lofty and transcendent nature and existence of the 14 sacred personages. Okay. That's one premise. The next premise is that God in the Quran describes the Ummul Kitab, the Lawha Mahfuz, as containing knowledge of all things. I've already read to you the verses, so I won't repeat. In the previous night, I read to you all the verses that say how Ummul Kitab, the mother book, the preserved tablet, contains knowledge of all things. And as I explained in a previous session, what that means is that Ummul Kitab is a high level of existence that subsumes all lower levels of existence. That's what this means. In addition to these two premises, so on the one hand we know that the first creature, the first being created by God is what? Is the Nur, the highest spirit, the highest essence and the transcendent existence and being in nature of of the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt. On the other hand, we know that Ummul Kitab must be a very, very lofty level of existence that contains and subsumes all lower level of existence, and therefore it is by that fact, it is in that light that it contains the knowledge of all things. Now there is a very interesting riwayah. There is a very interesting riwayah from Imam Sadiq in the book of Ma'an al-Akhbar. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. This riwayah, this report, is in regard to the interpretation of the first verse of Surah Qalam. Noon wal qalam wa ma yasturun. How many minutes do we have left until the azan time? I know that's not the real azan. We got tricked like that the night before last. Is that definitely the azan? Alright, so we'll leave it for inshallah after tomorrow. So alright, let me just repeat the two premises so you can inshallah keep them in your mind, inshallah, so we can start from there on the next session. Those two premises are: one, the high lofty nature of the Prophet is the first creature created by God, and that means it is the highest below God. It is the highest after God. The lofty existence of the Ahlul Bayt is the highest level of existence. And therefore, in the Munajate, in the Dua Rajabiyyah, we have the phrase that says, and I know a lot of it's going to raise eyebrows, لا فرق بينك وبينهم إلا أنهم عبادك. There is no, we are addressing God. There is no difference between you and them except that they are your slaves. Of course, this needs a lot of explanation, but my point here is that the being of the Ahlul Bayt is the highest level of existence. That is one premise. The second premise is that the Ummul Kitab, according to the Quran, is also a very high spiritual realm of existence, very, very high spiritual realm of existence that subsumes all lower levels of existence. We ask God, by the right of the Ahlul Bayt, by the right of the Prophet in the Ahlul Bayt, that he may enlighten our hearts by the light of the Quran, inshallah ta'ala. Wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tayyibin at-tahirin. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.